Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Hello and welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. Well, that unmistakable sound of a chapel bell is just behind me. I'm in the little village of Salisberg, about 850 meters. That's nearly 3,000 feet in central Switzerland. This is the Swiss heartland. This is where the Swiss Confederation was founded in the year 1291, on the 1st of August 1291. This features some of the most beautiful, picturesque scenery that you can imagine. For many people, this is Switzerland. High mountains, the Lake of Lucerne below me, which becomes the Lake of Uri at this particular point, because this is the canton of Uri, or a small bit of it. An historical place, but Salisberg has other significance, as you'll find elsewhere on the website too. But right now, let's focus on medicine, in particular Ayurveda, a medicine which is said to be at least 5,000 or 6,000 years old. It's the medicine of India. And Salisberg is the place where the first and oldest public Ayurvedic facility was opened in the year 1987. And it has a name attached to it, which is also synonymous with Salisberg, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the founder of the Transcendental Meditation Movement. Let's go inside to the Maharishi Health Center and visit the director of the center, Dr. Sophie Bell, M.D. Dr. Bell, I'm particularly wondering why the name Maharishi appears. We all know the story of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the pioneer of transcendental meditation in the West, the Beatles and all of this. Next door were his headquarters in the 1970s. But then he turned to Ayurveda. Why did he take that decision?
Well, it's difficult to answer these questions, to know what was the reason. I think the Ayurveda is belonging to the Vedic tradition of the old India. Ayurveda, even in India, has been lost over the thousands and thousands of years due to different influences and time passing. So probably that Maharishi felt the need of revitalizing, inspiring some great experts in Ayurveda, who are the Vedas, the Indian doctors, to come together and bring their experience and their knowledge about Ayurveda so that they could all together re-enliven this field of Ayurveda.
You were trained in France. You are a French national, and you were trained in the classic, in the Western sense, classic orthodox medicine, but you made a decision to go to Ayurveda. What would you say, knowing both kinds of medical practice, are the main differences between the two?
Yeah, there are big differences in between the two. What is known with the classical Western medicine is that when we treat someone, often we look only one part of it. Only the specialists are very well known for that. They are treating their problem in a very localized space with some chemical which will work specifically on some function, but which will very often have some many side effects beside of that. It's incredible how many people are hospitalized because of side effects of Western medicine and even dying every year.
And, of course, Western medicine tends to look at the symptoms of a problem and doesn't go very deeply necessarily into the cause. I think, isn't this a big difference between the Western and Ayurvedic or Indian approach?
Yes, they would not look into the cause, or they would look on a superficial way on the cause of the problem.
In the West.
In the Western system. In Ayurveda, it's completely different. We think more in a very global way. To see what is the balance in the physiology between mind, body, etc., so that we can have a more complete effect and as less side effect as possible. We are even saying that with the herbal plants that we are using in the Ayurvedic medicine, we have only some side benefits but not side effects.
And I know in Ayurveda you also teach that every individual is unique. There is no such thing as the standard patient. And you even have three humors, or doshas that they're called, and everyone is a combination or a part of these elements that makes each of us distinct and different. And I think part of the diagnosis is to determine who you are, physiologically speaking. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm, yes, in Ayurveda we see the balance in terms of what we call Vata, Pitta and Kapha, who are bringing this determination of the mind and body of the persons.
At the center of discovering the individuality of the individual, if I could put it that way, is the so-called pulse diagnosis. You feel the pulse of the patient, the left wrist for women, the right wrist for men. That is the main source of diagnosis, although you may use others. But what are you looking for in the pulse?
Yes, from taking the pulse, we can see in a quite thorough way what is the balance in the physiology. So we usually take the pulse with three fingers, which would correspond to the Vata, Pitta and Kapha. And we say that the pulse transports the memory of all what is in the physiology. And we know that in few seconds, the blood is going through the complete body. And when it goes through the whole body, it kind of carries the memory. Of what
it has like the imprint of these things.
Huh? Yeah, we could say it like that.
Yeah.
So then we take the pulse in a very special way that can give some indication on the root of the problem. What is the cause of the problem? How it came up?
Well, what happens when you discover the problem? You find a disorder in the system. It might be an organ disorder. It might be something else. I mean, how do you proceed? What is the treatment?
We can treat on many point of view. One could be to give some recommendation, for example, for the diet, how to eat according to what is the problem, the season, etc. Or eventually some recommendation about the routine. Is it important to have a regular routine, for example, such things. We have also a number of medicine which are made with plants which are coming from India. And which are tested again in Europe and used very regularly in the different treatments. Now we could speak also about Panchakarma, which is one very specific aspect of Ayurveda, which is more to clean the body from its toxins.
Panchakarma, I think this is almost a ritual in India. People go every year. It's like having a 10,000 mile or 10,000 kilometer checkup and maintenance on your car. It's done as routine, and people even look forward to it because they feel so much better afterwards. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can do a lot with Panchakarma. It's not that it is indicated in all kind of disorders, but in many situations it can improve. Because if we don't clean the physiology over the years, we may have many toxins accumulating, and then we say in Ayurveda that it's very necessary to remove them regularly.
I've heard that it's the toxins or the so-called ama that really kill you or make you age prematurely in the end. And these things have to be cleansed from the system, otherwise they'll pull you down. You feel tired, headaches, you look awful, you can't sleep. These are all typical symptoms of ama or impurities, is that right?
Yeah, it's some of them. Many symptoms like problems of arthritis, for example, could be very well due to ama, and also all the cardiovascular diseases are related most of the time to this ama, this accumulation of toxins over the years.
The World Health Organization formally and officially recommends Ayurveda as one of the great classic forms of medical practice. It's something like 5,000 or 6,000 years old and is said to be even the basis for Greek medicine and has had a tremendous influence on Asian medicine. Chinese approach is said to be part of it as well. But what do you, Dr. Bell, consider the realistic limitations of Ayurveda in the modern world? What do you treat with it? What do you not treat with it?
What we treat with it is all the chronic situation. This we can do quite well into a field where Western medicine is often very limited. We are also quite effective for all the preventive aspect, to prevent that some disease is coming. Some symptoms could be already there, or even not yet there, but we already take care about that.
Prevention, the old saying, is worth a pound of cure, and probably many pounds of cure.
Yeah.
One thing, though, there's so much talk of wellness, people going to spas for beauty treatments and massages that make you feel good. That's not Ayurveda. I mean, Ayurveda does make you feel well and improve your health, but it is a medical therapy. It is a medical system. It is not simply a weekend at a wellness spa. I think it's important to point out. Also the food. You're not going to have Chateaubriand and champagne here. The food itself is very austere, and it's very important to Ayurveda that you eat very, very special food.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when you come here to get a treatment, you should be able to be in the best position to recover from your problem. So this means you should be able to rest, you should be able to have a light, easy digestible food, and you should have good quality of treatments.
Medical care is expensive in this country, and people normally depend on financial support from medical insurance systems to pay for this treatment. What is your situation here? Is Ayurveda recognized by the leading Swiss medical insurance systems?
Yeah, we can say yes. In general, most of the big insurances in Switzerland are reimbursing at least partially all the treatments with Ayurveda. But of course, it depends of the insurance, and they may choose according to the problem of the person and different other factors how much they want to give from that.
But the important thing is that you are open to anyone. I've been here visiting and reporting over the years for various reasons. I've heard languages from all over the world, people from all over the world. You're quite cosmopolitan and international here. People come literally from all over the world to use this facility.
Yeah, this is a great luck to be here in Silisberg, in a small village in central Switzerland, and still to get some people coming from quite far away.
Dr. Sophie Bell, MD, the medical director of the Maharishi Ayurveda Center in Salisbury. Now we've come down to the dining room, which is also a lounge, which is very cozy and comfortable, and very quiet and peaceful, and an amazing view outside the window. And there are two ladies and a gentleman who are actually here for treatment. This lady, where are you from?
I'm from Switzerland, Zurich.
Is this your first time doing Ayurveda?
No, it's not a first time. I come again and again because I think it's good for me. I feel better. I sleep better. And, well, it's enough to feel better.
Do you have a stressful life otherwise, or one which is very full of
yes.
tension?
Last couple of years were very stressful for me. Uh-huh. Yes. And now I'm feeling better.
So you come back, you say, several times a year even?
1 to 3 times.
Depending on need.
Yes, and opportunity.
Thank you. Now let me ask the gentleman here where he's from.
I'm from Switzerland too.
It's amazing.
As you can hear.
And you're not from very far away. You're from this area, aren't you?
That's right. I actually live here in Salisburg, so that's special.
And you know all about what goes on here. I guess you do.
Yes, certainly. That's why I also make this experience again.
So what brings you for treatment here at the center?
Well, I felt it would be good to do something to stabilize my health. I feel pretty good, but a little more bit improvement on clarity and energy is my aim, and I feel that's going in this direction.
It makes you feel brighter, maybe a little clearer in your mind, better memory, this sort of thing?
Yeah, better memory I really could use and enjoy.
So it's an anti-stress device then?
Yeah, we could also say that, yes.
And what kind of treatments will you undergo? Do you have any idea?
Yes, there will be this beautiful Abhyanga, that's oil massage, and then they call it Shirodhara, that's oil on the forehead, that's very relaxing for the nervous system, and some other treatments also.
So it improves your health and also gives you that wellness that everyone talks about these days.
I think it goes much beyond the level of wellness. It's really a profound impact and rejuvenation.
Thank you so much, and success with your panchakarma, is it? You're cleaning yourself out?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And here's another lady in the lounge as well, who's looking very relaxed and very peaceful. And where are you from?
I'm from Lebanon.
Lebanon.
Yes.
Well, that is not around the corner.
No, it isn't. But I come back regularly because it does so much good.
You come to this establishment here in Salisbury?
Yes, I do.
What brings you here in particular?
The location is so beautiful, the people are so lovely, the food is so delicious, and the treatment is superb.
How long will you be staying?
About 7 days in all. That's just about a good average for purification treatment.
Now, this again is the so-called panchakarma. This is the internal cleansing of the system of the organism.
Yes, it is.
Now, what is a typical day? I mean, it's very difficult for some people to imagine. What do these people do? They get up in the morning. What happens to them all day? What is a typical day now when you're doing panchakarma?
Well, if you meditate, that takes part of the morning occupies part of the morning.
But that's not a requirement. You don't have to be a meditator. I mean, you can just be anyone, right? You don't have to meditate.
You don't have to meditate. About 2 or 3 hours in treatment, lovely walks, lots of reading, beautiful music. It's a lovely way to spend a week.
And what kind of treatments have you been having?
The treatments are all basically oil massages of different types according to your physiology.
And they go on quite a long time, don't they?
They do. They're very pleasurable and very beautiful. Sometimes 2 girls are just hosing you down with oil, and you're sort of bathing in oil. It's absolutely superb. Sometimes 2, sometimes even 3. Some of the types of massages need 3 people, and they're all working absolutely in harmony one with the other, and in silence. It's a very lovely experience.
It must be totally relaxing, with the way you describe the massage. It must be heaven.
It is. It is total bliss.
Now, how do you measure your success when you've left here after a week or so?
The level of energy is better. The level of happiness is better. And I've been coming back, I must say, for one particular problem that I've dealt with only through this method of purification. That's a very serious back problem that needed an operation. And for 10 years, I've dealt with it this way, and it's been very successful.
We hear stories about this a lot in medicine in general. Orthodox medicine says you need an operation or there's nothing to do about this, and someone enters Ayurveda, for example, and suddenly the problem is magically and completely cured permanently, it seems. These are not wild claims in that case. This has happened to you as well.
It has, and I would say it feels like magic, but it has a very basic scientific reason. In Ayurveda is a science of life, and it's very precise knowledge of how the body functions and why it functions one way or another and how to correct the dysfunction.
Well, obviously you're well read on this topic, one can hear that, but is it important that someone have some element of belief, or can just anyone walk in off the street and get results like this?
No belief is necessary whatsoever.
This is not spiritual medicine.
Absolutely not. We've just had a kid here who had a drug problem. He came rebellious. He went away very happy. It was a wonderful example of what can be done.
And he'll be back.
I'm sure he will.
As you will be, too.
Definitely.
Well, thank you very much, all of you, for telling us about your personal experiences and why you keep coming back to Salisbury, to the Maharishi Ayurveda Center here, under the direction of Sophie Bell, M.D. From Salisbury, the most historical spot of Switzerland, the birthplace of the Swiss Confederation back on the 1st of August, 1291, and some of the most beautiful scenery you'll ever see, and some of the most beautiful peace and quiet you'll ever enjoy.
I'm home in the Emmental looking out the window. We've had some fog lately, but today it's bright and sunny. Although we've been having frost on the ground every morning lately, here at 750 meters altitude. Morning temperatures have fallen to well below 0 Celsius sometimes, but have been milder during the day. So far, there has been no sign of snow, not even in the high mountains, which is worrying the winter sports resorts. At this time of the year, it's dark at 5:30 in the afternoon, and the days will be getting shorter and shorter. I went out to the living room before to prepare the fireplace for the evening. A fireplace is one of the greatest mercies and high points of a Swiss winter. And the smell of burning beechwood is everywhere out here in the country. In fact, some people still heat with it. It's against this backdrop that we're preparing for Christmas. As in so many other Swiss households, especially in German-speaking Switzerland, it's also the time of that treasured ritual, the baking of Christmas cookies. They all have names: Zinkli, Mehlandeli, Anis, Haselnussstängeli, Zimmetsterne, Basler Brunzli, Lebkuchen, Bratzeli, and Spitzbube. The other parts of Switzerland have their own specialties. Each one is different, but they still have one thing in common. They're sinfully good, and they're fattening. The one thing I'm sure of is that Christmas without them would be unthinkable. Here in the Emmental, the farmers go out in the woods and cut their own Christmas trees. A week or so before Christmas, the trees appear at roadside stands, and they're usually a lot cheaper than the ones sold in the city. For most of Switzerland, Christmas Eve is the important day. That's when everything suddenly grinds to a halt. Many businesses close early on the 24th, and candle-lighted office get-togethers take up much of the afternoon, not to mention last-minute shopping sandwiched in between. And as the evening approaches, families prepare to get together to have a special meal, and later gather around the tree to exchange presents. As is the custom, at least in German Switzerland, the youngest children start the tree festivities with the playing of wooden flutes. Then there's often the singing of traditional Christmas songs. Some would call it a sober Christmas. I rather think of it as reflective. In recent years, we've seen more and more electric lights decorating the outside of Swiss homes at Christmas time. That's nice. But inside, the tree itself is usually still decorated with real candles, which exude a warmth that cannot be replaced by electricity. But let there be no mistake about it. Christmas has become a commercial event in Switzerland, too. But the extent of the commercialization depends very much on where you are. For example, here in the Emmental region of Canton Bern, things are still pretty much the way they were 100 years ago, or even more. And the same can be said of many other places in rural Switzerland. Zurich's glitzy Bahnhofstrasse is not representative of Switzerland. Banking scandals and greedy managers notwithstanding, Christmas in Switzerland is still largely intact, even religious. Yes, there are worldly problems here, too. The tourism and export industries are suffering due to the high value of the Swiss franc. But another underlying reason is excessively high prices for Swiss goods and services that many people are no longer prepared to pay. To wax religious, one could call it greed, or avarice, which the beloved Swiss pastor and writer Jeremiah Gotthelf warned about in his moralistic stories more than 150 years ago. By the way, he's buried at his church at Lützelflüe, just 10 minutes from here. No, a Swiss Christmas is not exactly Walt Disney, but it certainly comes close. Wherever you are, I wish you and yours peace and the blessings of the season.